argument now in United States against Anderson. Ms. Kim.
May it please the court.
If you would like, you can lower the podium. There's a switch on the right-hand side, the lower right-hand side. Lower, on the right-hand side of the podium.
Oh. Thank you.
No, do not move the microphone.
I'm sorry.
Please. You can lower the podium.
Oh, I'm fine, Your Honor. Thank you. I represent the appellant in this case, Donella Anderson. There are two violations of RITA that occurred in this case when the district court sentenced Ms. Anderson. Both were procedural. The first was that the court failed to explain its reasons for imposing the sentence that it did. And the second error was that it presumed that the guidelines were reasonable when it imposed the sentence. Turning to the first issue first. The court failed to provide an adequate statement that's required under 3553C, that's required under RITA, that's required under this circuit Rule 50, and also other cases that have followed. When the court issued the sentence on Ms. Anderson, its only statement was a conclusory one. It said, I have read the pre-sentence report, I have read the supplemental report, I've reviewed the filings, I'm familiar with the facts from the plea, which actually happened 5 months earlier. And it said, based on all of this information, the totality of the circumstances before me, the court intends to enter the following sentence. Right in between there, the court did the guidelines calculation and came up with the sentencing range of 18 to 24 months in prison. What the court did cannot be the adequate and sufficient statement of reasons.
Why not?
That's required.
Why not? The court did exactly what the Supreme Court in Part 3 of RITA said would be sufficient in the ordinary case.
Respectfully, I disagree in that in RITA, the Supreme Court did say that there are times that the circumstances will make it clear that a sentencing judge found that the guidelines were appropriate given a certain case. It expounded upon the fact that there might be times that there'll be less of a detailed explanation needed or there might be more. But it still said that a statement of reasons of some kind is important, that the sentencing judge has to set forth enough detail for the appellate court to review the considerations and determine that there wasn't an abuse of discretion and that the judge had a reasoned basis. This court came to that same opinion 2 years earlier when Cunningham was decided, where in that case the court said, what is the duty that a sentencing judge has to make some sort of record, essentially, when either the prosecution or the defense makes a non-frivolous argument asking for a non-guideline sentence? And in Cunningham, which I believe RITA only supports, shows that there has to be something more. In this case,
What do you make of the Supreme Court's statement in Part 3 of RITA that circumstances may well make clear that the judge rests his decision upon the commission's own reasoning that the guideline sentence is proper and other in the typical case, and that the judge has found the sentence before him is typical? The court is, I thought, pretty clear that when the judge just says, I'm following the guidelines, and here's the pre-sentence report, and this is what I'm doing, that's enough. How else does one read what's actually in the RITA opinion?
I agree that in RITA, the situation was, and that general statement that sometimes the circumstances will make clear that this was the decision, and it was based on the fact that the judge had some sort of logic, had some sort of reasoning process to say, I am rejecting the argument that a non-guideline sentence is appropriate, and in fact, I find that the guidelines are completely appropriate. But that's where our case differs. In Ms. Anderson's case, the district court even beyond addressing the main argument that was made, that a non-prison sentence be issued because of what was termed to be extraordinary family circumstances, namely her three sons who were under the age of 16, who were relying on her, who needed her financial support and her caretaking.
Most defendants in federal cases have children.
I understand, and if the court
was... There used to be a rule that women got lower sentences than men because women were the principal caregivers for children, but that rule has been rather firmly rejected, and the argument here seemed to be a kind of appeal to a bygone era.
And particularly when you look at the fact that the husband was at home and she was with the husband, and that was all fleshed out in the PS. Oh, and it was certainly the subject of argument on both sides.
But it was also something that was written about in the sentencing memorandum, which was submitted, and the evidence before the court at the time that it was issuing the sentence was there was nothing to the contrary of the assertion that Mr. Watkins, who was Ms. Anderson's husband, would not be able to care for the children on his own. That was what he said, both in the PSR and in the sentencing memorandum. And secondly, that he would not be able to support the children financially, nor would they be able to continue in their private schooling, which they had been doing up until that time. But to go back...
Is there anything the judge said in Rita that wasn't said here? You know, the reasons given in Rita were less than 10 words that the district judge said, and the Supreme Court thought that was sufficient. District judge was indicating that he thought a normal sentence in the guideline range was adequate.
Your Honor, I believe that the difference is that in Ms. Anderson's case, the district court didn't even make any statements at all other than very broad statements saying, this is what I reviewed.
He said he'd consider the guidelines. He said he'd consider the pre-sentence report. He said he'd listen to the parties. That's just what the judge did in Rita. That's why I'm asking this question. Is there anything the judge did in Rita, which the Supreme Court said was adequate, that the judge didn't do here?
I believe that in Rita, although the court came to the same conclusion, there was more of a record made in that case. In that case, my understanding is that the district court found that a sentence at the bottom of the guideline range was appropriate. We have no comments at all about the appropriateness or not of the guidelines, and in fact, the second issue...
The judge said a sentence of 18 months was appropriate. That's why he gave it.
Yet we were asking for a non-guideline sentence, and the second...
The judge obviously didn't agree with you.
But unless this court is prepared to do a de novo review and actually
We're talking by one another. That's why I asked, is there anything the judge did or said in Rita that wasn't said here? All the judge said in Rita is, I think a guideline sentence is appropriate. I see no reason to give a different one. And he gave it. And the Supreme Court said, that's adequate.
And I would suggest that even a statement such as that from this court may have made the issue the judge would not have committed the same procedural error that is now the subject of appeal. If just a little bit more had been done by this court when it issued the sentence.
So what do you think the court could have said to have it comply with Rita? What more do you think the court should have said?
I believe that the court needed to at least give some basis for its reasoning. Perhaps it would have been, I reject the arguments. It doesn't have to go into a litany of every factor that it considered. Perhaps it might have said, I am now considering instead this issue. I believe that Mr. Watkins can do fine with the children. Perhaps the court said, I don't believe that the issue of a parent being the caretaker for the children is one that's readily available anymore, and I disagree with that.
And you're saying that we can't imply that that was the judge's thinking based on what the court said. Because those arguments, when the court says, I've looked at everything, I've considered everything, I mean, the implication, of course, is that all these things have been rejected. That's why I was trying to get you to articulate what more you thought the court could have
said. You're arguing that the judge must specifically address each argument the defendant makes for a lower sentence. And that argument was made to the Supreme Court in Rita, and it was expressly rejected. So how could we accept it now?
I believe that not every argument, but as long as it's non-frivolous, as long as there's a reasoned basis and evidence was submitted, I do believe that the court has some obligation to make a record, not only for this court.
As I say, that was the very argument the justices rejected in Rita.
I see that my time is up.
You know, we don't try to overrule the Supreme Court here. Thank you, Ms. Kim.
Thank you.
Ms. Fernandez-Harbath.
Good morning. May it please the court, Maribel Fernandez-Harbath on behalf of the United States. I'd like to address some of the issues that the court has raised and defense counsel has raised. The fact is the statements made by Judge Guzman at the district court were in fact the same ones that were approved by the Rita case. Just as in the Rita case, although his statement was brief, it was legally sufficient. The record makes clear that the sentencing judge listened to each of the arguments. The judge conducted a dialogue with the parties when they argued. Each party argued why the 3553 factors warranted the sentence that they thought appropriate. And then after hearing all of these arguments, then made the argument that, or made the statement that I've considered everything, all the information before me, which contained and included the repeated reference to the 3553 factors, and then imposed a sentence at the low end of the guideline range. As this court has found, when a sentence is based on when the sentence is within the guideline range, the court doesn't need to say much to say why it imposed that sentence. And it is clear that although counsel made that argument about the defendant being a mother of three, that the district court considered it and then rejected that statement. And just as in Rita, where the court held that, court stated that where a matter is as conceptually simple as this case, the record makes clear that the sentencing court statements were sufficient and nothing more was necessary. Here, this was a simple plea to a tax fraud case. The argument made by counsel about the defendant being a mother of three children and how incarceration would affect her family is one that is made before the district court in hundreds of cases. So we believe that the statement of reasons made, the statement given by the judge at sentencing was sufficient and did not, that the district court did not commit any procedural error at sentencing. And if there are no other questions, then I would ask the court to affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our final